Welcome to the Green Report Podcast, brought to you by the Texas Nursery and Landscape Association. I'm Paul Winsky with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension, your program specialist for the green industry. The Green Report Podcast will bring you current information on the industry, highlight businesses, and current research that can help your company be successful. Before we get started, here's a brief message from our sponsor, the Texas Green Industry Safety Group.
In this industry, protecting your business starts with protecting your employees. And that's especially important when they're behind the wheel. Motor vehicle crashes are the number one cause of workplace fatalities in Texas, but there are steps you can take to keep your drivers safe. And step one is contacting Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They created the Texas Green Industry Safety Group specifically for businesses like yours, and they can help you train your drivers to buckle up, slow down, avoid distractions, and stay alert on the road. Plus, as a safety group member, you'll save an average of 12% on your workers' comp premium and have the chance to earn an extra dividend every year. If safety and savings sound good to you, get started today by talking to your agent or visiting texasmutual.com/texasgreenindustry.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Green Report Podcast. Today, my guest is Brad Abramite, president of Magnolia Gardens Nursery in Magnolia, Texas. Brad, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Looking forward to visiting with you.
Great. All right. So, Brad, I know you and I have known each other for quite a while, but, you know, give the listeners some background information about yourself and Magnolia Garden Nursery, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Well, just myself, just going back to, you know, when I grew up as a child, I've been influenced with agriculture for quite some time. I grew up on a farm and ranch in the big city of Luling, Texas. I was on the Luling Foundation Farm, which is a kind of a demonstration farm that worked closely with the Extension Service, now, of course, AgriLife, and had the opportunity just to be involved with not only animals, but especially plants, vegetables, row crops, you name it. And so that just gave me the, I guess, seeds of agriculture that were planted into my heart. You know, graduated from high school there, went to A&M as a student. I received a bachelor's and master of science there, actually in horticulture, but I did not start out in horticulture. I actually started out in biomedical science, and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to go down the path of agriculture. I'm going to get into medicine. And I thought, well, that would be grand. And then I realized, you know, the seeds that were planted in my heart just continued to germinate and pulled me into horticulture. So into my sophomore year, I switched into horticulture, and the rest is history from an educational background. So after that, I worked a little bit actually with AgriLife, back then the Extension Service. I was a hort agent down in the Rio Grande Valley and really enjoyed that. But I quickly moved into production, ornamental wholesale production. And pretty much that's what I've been doing for the last 20 plus years of my life, is really working on the production side. All ornamentals containerized here in the state of Texas. So currently I am at Magnolia Gardens, joined Magnolia about 4 years ago. And as you mentioned, I'm currently president and partner in the organization. So I'm here for the long haul for this organization, for this industry. And, you know, that's something that I'm excited about and really proud to be part of an organization that's around, been around for a long time and will be around for a long time. And so Magnolia, sorry, go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead. Keep going. It's because I'd like to hear more about Magnolia. So let's go into it.
Yeah, you bet. So a little bit about Magnolia. The business was founded back in the late 70s, actually as a tissue culture lab. Tommy Merrick, the founder of the company, started with tissue culture in his bedroom. And it was a hobby, but it quickly turned into much more than that. And certainly what it is today, it's a large scale lab. We produce tissue culture starter plugs for the United States growers, basically, and even some international growers. And many ornamentals. Nandinas is one of our largest crops. We also have a line of succulents and other ornamentals and edibles as well. And so that was the beginning of the business. But quickly after the lab started, the business branched into the containerized business, the wholesale side of ornamental annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees. Right now, currently, we're 165 acres of production, anywhere from a 1 gallon annual all the way up to a 45 gallon tree. Everything in between, I would say our specialties are shrubs, perennials, and trees. And so we do ship primarily the state of Texas. I'd say 95% of our business stays in this state. And we ship to pretty much all the customer channels outside of the box stores. So no Home Depot, no Lowe's, no Walmart. And of course, we don't sell direct to the consumer either. I didn't really mention all of the tissue culture customer bases, but 95% of our customer base with tissue culture is the actual growers across the United States. All right. That's a little bit about Magnolia. And you mentioned we are in Magnolia, Texas. That's where the name came from. That's where the lab is. The nursery actually is in north of Waller. We're about 20 miles. The two divisions are separated.
So, Brad, did that coming into the position that you're in now and having sort of two different, different business models, all right? You've got the tissue culture, which is selling young plants, and then you've got the wholesale nursery side. What challenges did that present to you since it has really two different businesses operating separately?
Yeah, the personal challenge is kind of splitting between the two business models. However, we've put quite a bit of effort into unifying the two organizations and sharing services, in particular administration, some of our technical services, et cetera. So we're a lot more united as an organization than we had been in the past. There's still a lot of separation just between the day-to-day operations. So from that point, there's not a lot of difficulties because we do maintain those individual operations separately. I'd say there's really more synergies than difficulties, especially with the tissue culture lab. We're able to work directly with growers and really see some of the trends earlier on. That's one of the advantages, I believe, of this vertical integration, if you will. There's both challenges and benefits of the two divisions.
Okay. And you mentioned trends, which is a nice segue. So it's interesting. You can, take advantage of seeing some of the things that maybe your customers are dealing with that are buying your liners, your TC liners and things like that. But you've been in the industry for quite a while. So what trends are you seeing as a wholesale grower, whether good or bad? Hopefully we see more positives than negatives, but what things are jumping out at you that, either you thought I'd never see that or, we saw that coming a few years out and, we were ready for it.
Sure. I think there's both micro trends and macro trends. And a lot of the macro trends seem to follow the weather patterns and the macro weather patterns. I think back and there was a time period where we really didn't get hard freezes in Texas. There's a good 10 plus years. And the product mix in the state really shifted towards a lot more tropicals and plants that just weren't as cold hardy. But as everyone knows, the last several years we've been plagued with freezes, and it's really driven people away from a lot of the more tender shrubs and perennials. Now, my guess is we're going to probably see another macro trend where we experience another 10 or 12 years in the future where it gets warm again. Mm-hmm. And these things might be coming back even stronger in just a few years. Right now, however, there is definitely more emphasis on cold hardy plant material and drought tolerant plant material. And so you think of that criteria, and that just really highlights a lot of Texas natives. And not only natives, but just introduced plants that are suited well to our environment. So we've been really focused on growing that part of the mix. I know a lot of other growers have as well. You know, the Texas Superstar program is a program that has a lot of those items in the mix. We have our brand, the Plants for Texas, which there's some superstars in that mix, as well as just other plants that do really, really well in the Texas area. So I believe that's going to continue to take off. You know, there's still interest in edibles, maybe not as much as what there was during the pandemic, but that has still held on a bit. You know, we have some new shoppers from the pandemic across all generational profiles, but a lot of younger shoppers and newer shoppers out there, and they're looking for some unique things and some different things. And so that's good. We also are seeing a trend just of the general consumer to really be more interested in tough foundation plants. I think there's replantings going on because of the freezes, and they recognize they need something that's going to tolerate freezes and also just be a pest-free, disease-free, worry-free plant. So a lot of your foundation shrubs, a lot of the hollies have really shot up in popularity. They've always been popular, but even more so now. And I continue to see that being strong over the coming years. And then there's always the wildlife plants, whether it's attracting birds or butterflies, other wildlife. There's a small surge in that. This is a smaller population of buyers, but it's something definitely that's growing.
All right. And so how, you know, I know you've worked for various companies, and Magnolia is probably, how would you categorize, a mid-size, a small nursery, a mid-size nursery probably?
Yeah, I would say mid-size, either a large small or a small medium. So kind of in the middle, I would say.
So how easy or how quickly are you guys able to pivot to respond to some of these trends? Do you find it's a little bit easier due to the size of your, you know, your company, or, you know, what are your thoughts on that in order to supply the plant material or the type of plants that they're asking for?
Yeah, I would say maybe a little easier, but at the end of the day, it's dictated by the crop cycle times. And when you're shifting a shrub program, you're talking about years by the time you build up the propagation stock or get in the starters and grow out your finished size, whether it's a 3 or a 7 or a 15. So still the time horizon is long. And that's one of the challenges for us in this industry is, you know, if we react too quickly to the micro trends, by the time we ramp up those numbers, the micro trend changes again, and then we're sitting with, you know, long inventory that we can't move. So you almost have to take a macro perspective when making some of the mix changes.
All right. Well, good. It's interesting to hear. And I like the idea of these of sort of the macro and the micro trends, because, you know, some folks are always focused on in just one area, but you've got all these other little things that are occurring that bubble up, and all of a sudden, you know, you're either behind the eight ball or you missed out on something. And so being able to tap into that or be aware of what's going on is definitely a positive.
Right.
All right. So besides labor, what other challenges, and we talk about, you know, you mentioned weather, and you've, you know, whether it's, you know, heat or drought or the freezing colder temperatures that we're having. What other challenges are you guys dealing with over there at the nursery?
Yeah, well, those definitely the big ones. You mentioned the weather and the labor, and those aren't going to go away. But costs, you know, costs have risen. Everybody's felt the impact of inflation. And you go to the grocery store and you're walking away with either half a basket of what you used to have or the same full basket, but you're paying two or three times more. And so, you know, we're receiving the same cost pressures from all of our inputs. And you mentioned labor. Labor's been our biggest cost increase, and it's also our biggest cost as a percent of sales too. So that's really hit this industry hard. And I think, you know, that's not, it's understood at a high level, but when you start getting into the weeds, and really start talking about how those costs affect the bottom line, it's really well understood. And most people don't go that deep outside of the industry. And I think one of our challenges just as an industry is that our product is undervalued. And it's difficult for businesses to make a margin continuously. And you see a number of strong businesses that have gone out in the past few years just because of this inflation and just the inability to get the price increases that are needed to sustain themselves. And so I think that's our biggest headwind, honestly, just as an industry and not as competitors amongst ourselves, but us, we're competing with really other industries and where that consumer is going to spend their discretionary dollars. That's the tough nut to crack. And I think if you step back and if you were to ask most consumers, do you get more value out of buying $40 worth of plants or $40 worth of fast food, they're going to say $40 worth of plants. Now, $40 worth of plants certainly is not going to buy what it did in the years past, but neither is $40 worth of fast food. And so in general, the end consumer, as a percent of their disposable income, is not spending that much on plants. And I truly believe that they get much more value and are willing to spend more on our products than what we think. And so in my mind, that's the biggest challenge. And it's not like we're trying to get more money, more sales out of our end consumer. It's really providing more value for them, and they're beginning to recognize it. And yeah, I believe it's there to allow us as an industry just to be more profitable and to grow better and stronger than what we are today.
Yeah, I listened to a talk by Charlie Hall over the weekend. We were at a conference, and he continually talks to the industry about our pricing, and the industry in general should be asking more and not be afraid to raise their prices. The whole deal or idea from the COVID with regard to, people were gardening more and the connections that they're making. And it's more of that psychological, it's the health issues, all of that stuff. We've got the product that these folks want. We've just got to be able to put the value on it. And I think, have them understand, I think the demand is there. We've got to be able to also tell a story in order to get that information across.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point and a good reminder. And yeah, if you can tell that story and people start to connect how they're spending their money and how it's helping their life and improving their health versus the opposite, that's where it's at. I think the younger generations are really starting to embrace that more and more. And us in the older generations, we are, but maybe it's a little slower. So I think there's good momentum for us. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, great. About Magnolia, how do you see, or how do you differentiate yourselves from the competitors? If I'm a re-wholesaler and I'm maybe new to the market and interested in purchasing product, what jumps out? Why would I say, hey, I'm going to hitch my wagon to Magnolia because of blank?
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, I think our product mix is one of our strengths. We have a diverse product mix. It's also one of our challenges, because when you have more items, you can't produce as many units just based on your acreage. And so sometimes we'll run out of that product. But one of our strengths definitely is the diversity of the mix. We also are really focused on what does well and grows well in Texas. So I believe that customers that'll ultimately get product from us is going to be better suited for success in their landscape. Quality, I believe we produce a quality product, and we've been known for that. I believe our quality continues to improve and get better and better every day. So, a broad mix of reliable quality, I think, is a strength of ours. And I'd say one of our biggest strengths is just our customer service with our sales team, our inside sales team, our outside sales team. We truly listen. We truly respond. We make mistakes. We're going to always make mistakes. And I believe that we own up to them and we take care of those mistakes. And so we're there for the customer, certainly for the long haul. And yeah, today's transactions make a difference for today's financials and the month-end financials. But at the end of the day, that's not really how we make our decisions. We make it on the long term. So we're looking for years and decades of relationship. And so I think that's extremely important for us. I also believe we have a great turnaround time on our product as well. Have an excellent transportation team inside the organization, and very responsive, very good at what they do, and have relationships with the customers also. So that's something that's definitely a huge benefit. And then, of course, the fact that we are, you know, integrated with both the TC division and the container division, that's a strength.
Sure. Sure. And Brad, how many folks do you have working at Magnolia?
Around 150. And of course, you know, it peaks in the spring season and fall season.
Right. And is that both divisions pulled together?
That's both divisions combined,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, you know, mentioned earlier, you've 20 plus years, you know, you've been on the production side of the green industry, nurseries and ornamentals and stuff. What's the best advice that you received from someone as you were either starting out or even maybe you heard yesterday? You know, what's some of that best advice that you heard that you really took to heart and you were able to implement and, you know, sort of use it as a pillar moving forward in your career?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say more of the advice is just as a person, as an individual versus, you know, horticultural advice, if you will. You know, I grew up and whether it came from my parents or the folks that they exposed me to, the mindset of change and enjoying change was always something that was instilled in me. And I think that's important for everybody because life is changing faster and faster every day. And if you don't enjoy it, then your life's going to be more difficult every day because the degree of change is just so much. So definitely embrace change. And then, you know, I grew up also, I was in the 4-H program, and I can't say enough good about the 4-H program, but, you know, one of the parts of their motto is to learn by doing, and getting your hands dirty, actually physically interacting with the process and the people. Books are great, education's great, but actually doing it, is the best way to learn. And so that certainly has been an influencing factor on my life. And then just from a personal standpoint, just looking at purpose in our life. And every situation has a purpose. And whether you feel that today or not, just having faith and trust that every situation is going to turn out for the long-term betterment of us as individuals and of this world, that just really allows, you know, me as a human being to step back and take a breath and not let stress get to me. I still have stress, don't get me wrong, but just having that high level faith and trust is something that definitely has shaped my life.
All right. And so have you ever come across, I know you talked about embracing change. You know, how do you deal with, you know, if you've got some workers or people that are having a hard time embracing that change? How do you get them over the hump to say, all right, I'm on board and let's move forward with it? Has that ever been a challenge or an issue as you're whether changing gears or changing direction with something and getting them getting their buy-in?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a huge challenge. It all comes down to communication. And I'll be the first to admit that I'm not the best communicator. You know, I'm typically assuming that other people are getting it and understanding it just like I am. And that's always not the case. And so, you know, I've been I would say coached to continuously repeat things and continuously explain, even if I'm tired of explaining it and repeating it. And I think that's a key, and I still don't do enough of it. And so when it comes to having folks just really embrace change and understand it, it's all about communicating not just what the change is, but how it's going to impact them and the company and the future in a positive way. And also to share the challenges that it might bring about in the meantime and recognize that as, hey, that's part of it. And let's bear through it and let's work through that change towards what the future is. And so just constantly repeating that and dripping it through the conversations is where the, I think, the success is. And I think we as humans are not good at that. And I'm the first to admit I'm not either.
Yeah, I think it's communication is always the key. And like you said, even when you think, you know, it's one of those you can't assume, you think everybody's getting it, but, you know, saying it over and over, even if you think they're getting tired of hearing it, you know, hopefully it's going to turn the light on and people are going to jump on board with it and buy into the change and the direction that things are going. So
yeah, no, absolutely. And if we're able to recognize some wins along the way and point those out and celebrate those, that's also very, very helpful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, an advantage, you know, you and I worked together for several years. I think an advantage that you probably have is you are bilingual. So you're able to communicate in Spanish with a lot of the workers. And I think that also helps. I think being able to get that point across, whether you're speaking with someone in English or in Spanish, I think that's got to be also an advantage.
Yeah, no, it certainly helps and allows, you know, us to connect better for sure.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's the Green Report. This is sponsored by TNLA. And so how has TNLA influenced you in your career? How have you been able to take advantage of, you know, what TNLA has to offer?
Yeah, you know, it really goes all the way back to my school days, and I was exposed to TNLA as a student, was able to go to the expo. Back then it was called different things back in the day, but what we know as expo today was my first experience. And then I was able to go to some of the TNLA regional meetings as a student and just interact there to see it. So that was the first influence that just really supported, I guess, the youth and the kids. I don't think there's enough students that get involved with TNLA at this point as what we could have in the future. And so I would continue to push just interaction with students. Aside from a student, just being out in the industry, the forums that TNLA puts together for networking and education are outstanding. Whether it's the Hort Forum, the workshops, the regional meetings, it just offers the outlet and the organization for the industry to collaborate, interact, build relationships, and always learn something. And I think the educational sessions that have been put together in the past few years have continued to get better and better and better. And it's bringing things that are new to us. Yes, there's some things that are repeated, but there's just a lot of new content that's really, I believe, helping us as industry leaders. And then there's a lot of behind the scenes things that are going on, and some folks get more involved than others. But when you look at some of the advocacy that TNLA is pushing behind the scenes, whether it be policy or industry promotion, those things are certainly of value to us.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned, you know, sort of the next generation, you know, the youth, I guess we can call them youth now since we've been in the industry for quite a while, but, you know, that next generation. So what's your advice to someone, you know, say you're talking to students at, you know, either SFA or A&M or whatever, you know, what type of advice would you give them if they're thinking about getting into a career within the green industry?
Yeah, no, you know, there's always the mindset of trying to push through college as fast as you can. I think even nowadays, a lot of the academic organizations are pushing for you to move through really quickly. I would say take some time. And if you need an extra semester or two, that's fine. Use that time to have two or three internships. I did one and I regret it. I wish I would have done two or three. Study abroad. Work part-time. Ideally work within the department or within the industry, but definitely work. And whether you need the money or not, I think it's a good thing to do just because you're building your network, you're building your experience. And if you're able to work on campus with a professor within a department, that's even better because you're building relationships with the professors, with the staff, and with other students that are like-minded. And I'm talking all college here, but, you know, there's opportunities in high school as well. I know there's the 4-H program, the FFA program. Matter of fact, I was at the A&M Horticulture Career Fair yesterday, and there was a group of high school students that came with their FFA leader. And I thought that was outstanding. They were able to interact with the college students, able to see the exhibitors there and just understand more about the business. So high school, college, get out there, get your hands dirty, work, experience as much as you can, because you're not going to have that opportunity once you graduate and you're out in the workforce. And when you try something different and you try something different frequently, that doesn't bode well on the resume, and it doesn't show longevity, which a lot of employers are looking for. So I guess my point is try to get that figured out as much as you can early on versus later in your career, and use this time as a student to do that. And, you know, us in the industry, we're always open. I would invite any high school student or college student to come out to the nursery and have a personal guided tour and just to talk about what we do and share. And that gives the students opportunities to determine, well, hey, I really like that, or no, I don't. And then they can make some decisions based off of that. I don't think enough of that happens. And students just do not take the time. And I think that's a huge thing, huge benefit that this industry provides. I can guarantee you that any nursery business would open their doors to a student.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's interesting about things have definitely changed where there are more opportunities for internships, and it's a lot easier to find them now. I know when I was in high school or an undergrad, it was difficult to find. You know, it was all you had to fill out a paper form, and you had to, you know, the internet wasn't around yet, and so it was sending letters, and so you had to do a lot of legwork in order to find these things. You know, your professors had some contacts and things like that, but I think now there are a lot more opportunities, and I think a lot of these internships or opportunities sort of fall barren because, you know, there's not enough people to feed into them, and I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges.
Yeah, I would agree. And I guess the last bit of advice, you mentioned the Spanish language and just learning a second language, whether it is Spanish or French or Mandarin or something else. But certainly in the state of Texas, the Spanish language is a benefit. And it just, you know, keeps the mind sharp. Most of us are science minded, and language uses and exercises the other side of the brain. So it's a definite benefit.
I agree. So, Brad, where can getting ready to wrap things up here, where can people go to learn more about Magnolia Garden Nursery?
Yeah, we have a website, www.magnoliagardens.com. And so that's probably the easiest way just to see an overview of the organization. You know, we have our phone number and address on there as well. I'd welcome anybody to come by, see the farm, and visit. So those would be the best way, certainly.
All right. And does Magnolia have anything on social media?
You know, we do. We do have some Facebook and Instagram. We're not the publishers every day. And so you can certainly see some things on there as well. That's something we definitely stand to improve. But yes, you can find us on there as well.
All right. And I guess I've got one more question for you. So, and that would be, is there one question that you wish I had asked? And if it is, you know, how would you have answered it? So is there something that I missed that you said, I wish he had brought that up because I'd like to talk about that.
You know, we didn't really talk, and I guess you talked about trends. But, you know, the question always comes up about organics. Okay. And being able to balance, you know, an organic operation versus an inorganic operation or using synthetics. And that's something that, you know, us as an industry, I would say, especially on a large scale, we're 95%, you know, synthetics when it comes to chemistries and fertilizers and so forth. I see that changing in the years to come as there's more science and more education around just the organics world, whether it's beneficial bacteria or fungi, different fertilizer types and how they all work together. I think we're still a ways off from truly understanding it and leveraging it on a large scale, but I believe in the coming decades there'll be some pivots in that direction. And so I don't certainly have the answers. It's something just me personally, I'm interested in learning more about. I think we as an industry can learn more about it as well and slowly make some migrations and some changes. It's going to be very, very difficult. And so, you know, we are a green industry. Our plants produce oxygen, and I think that's awesome and incredible. We can probably be greener as we start to learn more. But I also know we're going to have to be patient as an industry. And yeah, I wish I had more information to share on it, but I think those questions are good. And I think they should be asked more and more because we can learn more and more with the new science that's coming out.
Yeah. And it's interesting you said that because I just saw an article this week where Syngenta is now collaborating with a company in Europe that focuses more on biopesticides. Mm-hmm. So even the large companies are seeing that and they're trying to offer more products because growers want to grow more sustainably, you know, whether it's organic or sustainably, however you want to use that term. But I think that is something that the industry sees is a need. And I think part of it is being pushed from some of the consumers where they want their product to be produced with, you know, less chemicals and things like that.
Yeah, it all comes back to profitability and right now just the cost effectiveness of it. I think that's where the challenge lies. And it goes back again to the pricing of the material. And we could all produce our products differently if we were able to get the pricing at the end of the line for it. So, you know, back to the conversation you were discussing with Charlie Hall and just our value proposition as an industry. Once we get more of that momentum, we're able to invest in more of these types of sciences and products.
Yeah, it's back to telling that story. And so if you can tell that story where your practices are changing and this is why we're doing it, and it's better for the environment, better for the industry, better for the consumer, you know, as you said, hopefully the price increases follow then because they can see what you're doing in order to produce a high quality product.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, great. Well, Brad, I want to thank you. Definitely appreciate you coming on. Appreciate your time. And I really hope that you guys have a great spring this year. You know, hopefully, you know, the product is ready on time and it's ready to be loaded and getting it out to your customers. So,
yeah. Well, thank you. We're looking forward to a good spring, and I appreciate the opportunity here to be on with you and anytime. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for listening in to the Green Report. And we will be back again next month. You all have a great day. Thanks. Thank you for joining us for today's Green Report podcast, brought to you by the Texas Nursery and Landscape Association. I'd also like to thank our sponsor, the Texas Green Industry Safety Group. If you need additional information about TNLA or upcoming events, please go to tnlaonline.org. And that's one word, tnlaonline.org. Thanks for listening. This is Paul Winsky signing off from the Green Report Podcast. Until next time, may your green industry business continue to bloom. We'll talk to you soon.
In this industry, protecting your business starts with protecting your employees. And that's especially important when they're behind the wheel. Motor vehicle crashes are the number one cause of workplace fatalities in Texas, but there are steps you can take to keep your drivers safe. And step one is contacting Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They created the Texas Green Industry Safety Group specifically for businesses like yours. And they can help you train your drivers to buckle up, slow down, avoid distractions, and stay alert on the road. Plus, as a Safety Group member, you'll save an average of 12% on your workers' comp premium and have the chance to earn an extra dividend every year. If safety and savings sound good to you, get started today by talking to your agent or visiting texasmutual.com/texasgreenindustry.